You're listening to
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. It is July 17th, 2015. Boy, it's been one hell of a week. Endless stuff going on, really proving the point that we really, as Americans, have to try to stay on top of everything that's happening. Make our politicians accountable, and that's what this radio show is about. Getting the Americans to do the job that they must do. I'm a retired former special agent with the INS, as those of you familiar with my program know. And ever since the attacks of 9/11, I've taken my show on the road to try to wake everybody up about the true significance of immigration. Not about keeping everybody out, not about being nativist or xenophobic, but about being practical and understanding that just as homeowners must look through the peephole before admitting strangers into their homes, America, metaphorically, must look through its peephole. And in fact, at the beginning of my 30-year career with the INS, I was an immigration inspector assigned to Kennedy International Airport here in New York City, where I had my eye on America's peephole, as did so many of my colleagues. And that only makes sense. If an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, then keeping criminals and terrorists out of our country represents far more than a pound of cure, perhaps a ton of cure. And that's what my program is geared to do. We discuss all sorts of topics, but usually my focus is on the multifaceted issue of immigration, and certainly tonight will be no different. So I'm glad you're joining me. I want to talk about a couple of websites I'd very much like for you to visit, starting, of course, with my very own personal website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I have been writing for a terrific organization in California, Californians for Population Stabilization in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, beautiful place to be, especially in the wintertime, but it's really a wonderful place all year round, and great friends out there. And their wonderful website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for Progressives for Immigration Reform. You see there on the left side of the aisle. This isn't about left or right. This is about right or wrong, folks. Also, I have become a columnist for Front Page Magazine, a conservative website. See, we have balance here. This is truly fair and balanced because, again, not about left or right, but about being pro-America, to protect America, protect Americans. What a novel thought. Just go to Front Page Mag, M-A-G, Front Page Mag, and that wonderful website will pop up. They have a whole bunch of great writers. I'm proud to be one of them. Have a bunch of articles on their website as well. Also, The Social Contract. They are a quarterly publication, and in just about 2 weeks or so, I can't wait for it to come out, I have written the lead story about the nexus between immigration and national security and the war on terror, a topic that almost nobody wants to talk about. It is absolutely stupefying. I was watching TV today, watching the coverage of that horrific shooting in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there was all kinds of discussions and debates. Should we be arming the soldiers who are at those official facilities when in uniform, and should we be looking at intel, and should we do this, and should we do that? And what was largely missing from the conversation? Immigration. Now, Tucker Carlson did raise it on Fox News earlier today, and he just raised it again when he was at Fox. But, you know, he's the exception. Very little discussion about immigration. Never mind what the 9/11 Commission had to say. Never mind what reality is. We don't want to deal with reality here, folks. Let's just ignore the obvious because there's an agenda in play. So we will not ignore the obvious. We will focus on the immigration issue in a way that makes sense. Not about vilifying anybody, certainly not immigrants, but about being careful about our policies so that we don't wind up letting in the people who want to do harm to us. And if that's a problem, then maybe we need to reconsider what it is to be a citizen of a country, why we have a military. To me, it would appear this is the most fundamental of issues. Keep the people out who want to hurt you. And yet, if you listen to so many politicians, both sides of the aisle, well, they're here, we can't deport them, let's give them citizenship, let's get them out of the shadows. And we're going to talk about those shadows. We will absolutely talk about the shadows and the nonsense behind so much of the rhetoric by so many politicians. And we've got to get rid of the rhetoric, and we've got to start to use some common sense. So that will be my focus. I want to start out this evening looking at this whole issue of sanctuary cities. In fact, we could probably devote most of the evening to talking about sanctuary cities, because the very concept of a sanctuary city flies in the face of common sense. It flies in the face of rationality. And it goes along with the rhetoric that we hear from some of these lame-brained politicians. And I'm not going to mince words, because people are dying. And when people are dying, it can't get more serious than that. And it's not hate speech to say, let's be careful who we let in. You're not antisocial if you lock your door at night, especially if the police have warned you that there are home invaders and burglars roaming your neighborhood. The common sense thing to do is lock your door and look through the peephole carefully before opening the door to a stranger. That's all that we're asking to do. And when you look at the horrific killing of Catherine Steinle, by Francisco Sanchez, an illegal alien who had been deported five previous times, had seven convictions for felonies. I don't believe that he was intentionally trying to kill her or perhaps anybody else, but what he did caused her death. And why he was at large, how San Francisco can shield people like that from detection by immigration authorities who simply want to send them back to their home countries. I mean, think what we're talking about. We're not talking about lynching people from a tree or throwing them off of a cliff. We're simply saying you have misbehaved or you entered illegally or whatever, and it's based on our laws. And if you look at our laws fundamentally, if you look at the grounds for excluding an alien, and yes, I use the term alien because it's factually and legally the accurate, proper word to use. And, of course, the whole thing starts with this name game. Oh, my God, you can't use the word alien because now that's like the N-word. Well, no, it's not. You see, there's a big, big, big problem with the word alien. The problem is that it provides clarity to the conversation. And when you are a con artist, when you are a grifter, the last thing you want is honesty and clear language. You obfuscate the issue with a smokescreen of words that confuse everybody. Well, they're immigrants and they're undocumented if they're here, and they can't possibly be illegal because people can't be illegal. And you know, I think back over a year ago, and they had just closed the beaches out in New Jersey on Long Island. And the story was, I was getting ready, I think, to actually go into a TV studio, and I had jumped into the shower, and I had the radio on, and the CBS report was about how some people had gone swimming at a beach that had been closed to swimmers because the lifeguards were no longer on duty. And what blew me away is that CBS Radio, which I don't think in years has used the term illegal immigrant even, maybe they have, but I certainly haven't heard it. I don't listen to them 24/7. But they referred to the people who went swimming by climbing over the fence, boy, does that sound familiar, as being illegal swimmers. Illegal swimmers. They almost fell over in the shower. Because here we had CBS News describing people who had climbed a fence to get to the beach they had no business going to because there were signs everywhere saying beach closed, and they described them as illegal swimmers. But when you cross our borders illegally and trespass, God forbid you should say, well, that person is an illegal alien. And the word alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. That is not the Mike Cutler definition. It's not even the Merriam-Webster definition. That's the definition for the word alien as defined by our Immigration and Nationality Act, that comprehensive body of law that deal with immigration, all aspects of it. Can someone please tell me, because maybe I have lost my mind, but can somebody please tell me where in the world there is an insult in describing a person who is not a citizen or national of the United States? It doesn't say alien means they smell bad. Aliens mean you're stupid or immoral or crazy or ugly. It simply says an alien is any person not a citizen or national of the United States. Wow, what an insult. We have just over 300 million citizens of the United States. There are over 7 billion people on planet Earth. So over 6.5 billion people, if they were to come to the United States, would rightfully be called aliens. And when we as Americans travel to other countries, by virtue of not being citizens in those countries, we become aliens. And it's not an insult. It's a statement of reality. And there is no country on the planet that would adopt the entire world. This is lunacy. But if you dare use the word alien, oh my God. And the so-called schools of journalism have said, oh, you can't use that word alien, it's an ugly word. Why is it ugly? There is absolutely nothing wrong with the word. And then some people say to me, well, this is about political correctness. And you know what, folks? I'm going to let you all in on a secret. My color, me, I am politically correct. My kids have never heard me use the N-word. Nobody has ever heard me use the N-word. I think it's a despicable, disgusting, humiliating, dehumanizing word. And so are similar words, and I'm not going to list them here. But we've all heard them that deal with being Jews or Italians or Asian or whatever. And those slang, despicable, denigrating terms are wrong. And I am politically correct because I won't use any word that insults or embarrasses or is hurtful to people. This use of language, folks, has nothing to do with political correctness. You see, by giving it the term political correctness, you're giving this Orwellian propaganda newspeak credibility it is not entitled to. It is false, deceptive language designed to lie. It is designed to twist definitions and perceptions. That is not what political correctness is about. It is about being deceptive, and I've been writing about this for Front Page, and I've been writing about this for CAPS. And when you hear this nonsense about the Latino vote, I don't know of a more disgusting form of profiling. What does the term Latino vote, black vote, or Jewish vote mean? Because if you accept that notion, that there is such a thing as a black vote, why don't you just say those people? You know, in law enforcement, we do profile. And I spent 30 years in law enforcement. But usually, in law enforcement, profiling involves lots more than someone's race. It's where they are. It's how they're acting. It's when they are. It's a whole bunch of situational features and factors that come into play. You know, white kid in black neighborhood, 3 a.m, drugs have been sold on the block. He shows up with a brand new BMW without a state plates. You need to talk to him. He's not there because he lives on the block. He's not living on the block, likely. I mean, maybe he does, but then why the out-of-state plates if he's living on that block? Who is he visiting at 3 o'clock in the morning? That may be legitimate. So you don't go on like gangbusters and, you know, throw him out of the car and go nuts. But certainly you need to approach that person and in a very civil way say to him, you know, what are you doing here? Do you live on the block? Who are you visiting? That is proactive law enforcement. Not because he's white, not because he has out-of-state plates, but you put everything in totality. You know, and I'm using the example of the white kid in a black neighborhood. The same thing would be true if it was a black kid in a white neighborhood or an Asian, because people very often will be in an ethnic environment. Sometimes not. And it may not have anything to do with the person's color or the ethnicity of the neighborhood. There's other factors involved. But the point of the matter is there are ways that you profile and reasons that you profile. And it's entirely appropriate. But when you talk about the Latino voter, what you're really saying is anybody whose last name is Rodriguez, all I need to know is that's your last name. I now know everything I need to know about you. It's disgusting. The media does it all the time, and the pollsters do it all the time. And the saddest thing is that politicians hire these pollsters because they're so desperate to win that they throw common sense and decency out the window. And maybe, yes, they do win, but maybe they win in spite of this foolishness. And I think what you're seeing now when you look at Donald Trump, and I don't always agree with what he says, certainly I wish he would tone things down a little bit. But, you know, it's interesting that here's a guy who has an interview. He doesn't have six people standing there whispering in his ear, handing him little notes, don't say this, do say that. He just goes in there and he's Donald Trump. And I think that's part of why the polls are reacting that way. Because suddenly you have a guy who certainly appears to be a straight shooter. And even if you don't like what he says, not what I'm saying, but let's say you don't like it. How refreshing is it to see somebody who has the self-confidence, who has the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, to speak his own mind? Not this mamby-pamby where these guys will talk for an hour and they walk away from the microphone and you still don't know where they stand. You see, that's what we've turned into. People are hungry for leaders. And what we're seeing today aren't leaders. These are people that are chasing mythical votes. You know, when I think of Boehner or Clinton or any of these bums, I really have no use for most of these characters. I think of shining a flashlight on the floor and watching a puppy scrambling after that light he or she can never catch. That's how they're chasing the mythical Latino vote. And the lies that are being told are unbelievable. Hillary Clinton stood there a couple days ago and said, well, those Republicans don't want the immigrants to get citizenship, a path to citizenship. What in the world are we talking about? We naturalize over 500,000 new citizens each and every year. We admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year, more than the rest of the world combined. And I'm registered as a Democrat. I vote as an independent, so I'm not being partisan when I say this, folks. But when she could talk about Republicans not wanting immigrants to become citizens, my gosh, it takes my breath away. When Bernie Sanders says, we don't need to secure that border, give him citizenship now. When O'Malley says, wow, if we gave 11 million undocumented work authorization and citizenship, the rate wages would rise. How? They'd come out and they'd contribute to the economy. They're in the economy now. And all that would happen is we would wind up giving, and I don't think it's 11 million. I think by the time we'd be done with this darn thing, it would be maybe 30 or 40 million, just as we saw with Reagan. The Reagan administration promised us about 1 million or a little bit more would participate in the amnesty of 86. And by the time the dust settled, it was almost 4 million. If the same thing happens now, you do the math. And we wouldn't be able to interview them. We'd be giving everybody identity documents. And many people will have come in after the fact and claimed that they came here within the time limit, no interview, no field investigation. They entered undocumented, according to the other side. I call it uninspected, and that's what the law calls it. That's what the investigative handbook used to call it. I don't know what it says these days. Uninspected. So there's no document to prove when they came here. You could have people coming here 2 days ago claiming he's been here 20 years. Lots of luck. All this would do is encourage another human tsunami that we can't cope with. And we hear this nonsense. And when you flood the labor market or the labor pool with more authorized workers, all you do, supply and demand kicks in, wages go down, period. And remittances go up. And as it is, we lose between $125 and $200 billion a year in remittances. But, you know, the corporations love that because they want to pay lower wages. Never mind that the economy of the United States is headed the way of Greece. Never mind that the remittances alone account for at least the annual increase of America's national debt, believe it or not, by the time you're done with the multiplier effect. And that's without looking at wage suppression. That's without looking at the displacement of American middle-class workers who go from middle-class home-owning, tax-paying consumers to people living below the poverty line who lose their homes and no longer have disposable income, and instead of paying taxes, depend on expensive safety net programs, which further worsens the debt. Never mind the impact on education and healthcare systems. Who cares? Because there's money to be made by the unscrupulous. And along the way, people are dying. Along the way, people are being killed by people who shouldn't be here. Whether it's drunk driving, as happened to so many people, whether it's somebody without a license who runs over a 25-year-old law school student, as happened to my friend Don Rosenberg's son in San Francisco. We are encouraging lawlessness. This is, as I wrote for capsweb.org a while back, the slippery slope to anarchy. And indeed, we have the president now visiting prisons. I mean, this is the Twilight Zone. I know Rod Serling is writing the script. Not a phone call to the Steinle family, but the president was there touting the progress that convicted felons are making in putting their lives back on track. And that's great. I hope we can rehabilitate prisoners. You know, we do call these facilities correctional facilities. Not much correcting, unfortunately, going on. Not as much as we would like to have. Certainly there's something wrong there. But the point is, not a phone call to the Steinleys, but when Michael Brown, after he charged a police officer and wound up getting killed with all that went on after that, but not a word about Catherine Steinle being killed because it goes against the narrative about aliens committing crime. You know, it's astonishing. 20 years ago, if someone would have told me that this would be the state of affairs, I would tell the person that they needed psychiatric treatment. This is beyond crazy. This is beyond crazy. And, you know, the vitriolic rhetoric, oh, you know, you're anti-immigrant if you want the borders secured and the laws enforced. And I listen to Jeb Bush. See, it's both sides of the aisle, the crazies. Oh, coming here illegally is about love. Really? Well, I guess, you know, going to prostitutes is also about love in his definition or something. You know, he's certainly looking for love in the wrong places. This isn't about love, and this isn't about compassion. We have crime that's really very serious, and this incident with Kathleen Steinle, while dreadful and horrific and the stuff of nightmares, unfortunately isn't isolated. This kind of tragedy plays out multiple times across the country each and every single day. For whatever reason, you know how the media works, very pretty young lady, gets killed, tragic story, bango, it's on the front page. You know, maybe if she was 65 years old and not all that photogenic, the media wouldn't pay attention. God only knows what the decisions are that are made by the editors of the various news organizations. But I can tell you this is happening day in and day out, the steady drumbeat, and this isn't acceptable. This is not acceptable. And so we have sanctuary cities that harbor, that shield illegal aliens from detection by immigration. And then we have the politicians saying, well, we don't want immigration to deport people unless they've done serious violent crime. I mean, I believe it was San Francisco. Somebody there had said some foolishness to the effect that, well, you know, if it's only a burglary and it's nonviolent, anybody who's ever been the victim of a burglary loses their sense of security. Imagine coming home and finding all of your possessions, all of your life's possessions, all of those little things that mean nothing to anybody else but that photograph of somebody who passed away or the ashes of a pet or whatever, strewn all over the apartment. Imagine that nightmare. And if somebody could do this to a person and they're here illegally on top of it and immigration can deport this guy, oh, no, that's too harsh. Too harsh what? Why is it that compassion never seems to apply to American citizens anymore? We're told about the DREAM Act. Oh, these young people have all these aspirations. folks, how many American kids have aspirations and they go to college and they run up student loans that look like a mortgage payment, and then they're being displaced by people from countries like India because they will work for less money, and we're being told about our insatiable appetite for the world's best and brightest by politicians who tell us about American exceptionalism. And the best and brightest, according to them, come from outside the United States. So somebody please ask them, what in the world does that phrase best and brightest mean and exceptionalism mean when you keep attributing it to people from other countries? The lies, the nonsense, the propaganda. Folks, this is not about political correctness. This is Orwellian. It is propaganda and it's lies. You know, anytime you go to a rally with these knuckleheads that are running for office and they start to spew that venom about we need America to lead and we need to bring in the best and brightest, you better ask them what America is. You know, Frank Sinatra did a wonderful song called The House I Live In. And I won't try singing. I used to make money with my singing. People paid me not to. But it started out with, what is America to me? And by the last stanza, the last words of that song, most of all, it's its people. Not the cities, not the rivers, not the parks, not the trees, not the mountains. The people. How in the world are the people leading when 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 American families is on some form of public assistance? Is that America leading? Please, give me a break. So we hear this nonsense. Well, we got to have America lead, and if America leads, we have to bring in all these foreign people. I got to tell you, I'm very proud of what the team did at JPL with New Horizons, with those incredible photographs coming back, and now they just did a virtual tour of Pluto, putting it all together, and more of this data is going to come in. And these were Americans that did this. The world's best and brightest did this, folks. And I'm not against people from other countries. And if somebody has a specific skill or talent that does not displace an American, Elon Musk, you know, whoever, great, bring them in. I'm glad they're here. But you cannot tell me that if you're importing hundreds of thousands of foreign workers that they're exceptional. The only thing exceptional about them is they work for exceptionally low wages. And when we put foreign students to work in the United States, and almost all of them do get practical training, as it's called, the employer does not put money into Social Security or Medicare. Center for Immigration Studies did a study that said that over, I believe it was a 5-year period, something like $4 billion did not go into those quickly bankrupting insolvent funds, those trust funds, because instead of hiring Americans and lawful immigrants where they would have to contribute to those funds, the students don't have to contribute. So if you hire those students, you don't have to put money in the funds. It's yet another incentive to not hire Americans. And yet another way that Medicare and Social Security are taking yet another hit. It's remarkable, but it is rare to see that story in the news. Not because we're being politically correct, but because we're being lied to by a bunch of con artists and grifters. And meanwhile, everybody knows that we have a problem with crime. And no, that doesn't mean that anybody who comes to America is a criminal. And I'm not going to single out any one country because it doesn't work that way. And as an agent, I'm telling you from private, personal experience, rather, that the people that commit the crimes aren't always representative of the countries they come from. But there is a disproportionate amount of criminality among the illegal aliens. Because people who run the border are excludable. And the grounds for exclusion are aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and prone to violence or are sex offenders, convicted felons, alien smugglers, drug smugglers, gun runners, members of organized crime, terrorists, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, and then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, or if they worked, would compete unfairly with Americans who need the jobs. That's it. There's nothing in the law about race, religion, or ethnicity. And as an agent, I've arrested people from almost every country on the planet. Not just Latin America, from Asia, from Europe, from the Middle East, from the Caribbean, you name it. I've encountered them and arrested them. But the narrative that we keep hearing from the politicians who are looking to swindle us is that somehow it's unfair and it's not nice and it's not polite and it's not compassionate. I'm very compassionate, but I'm going to tell you, folks, my compassion begins with my fellow Americans first. And when you look at the poverty among America's minorities, American Latinos, American blacks, it's horrific. It's horrific. And you wonder why kids are getting caught up in crime? What do you do when you can't get a job and you can't get money and you have aspirations like everyone else and there's no legitimate way to make a buck? I'm not justifying crime. You're missing the point if that's the takeaway. But when you are in these neighborhoods, and I spent years in those tough neighborhoods, and the success stories were the people that were the numbers runners and the pimps and the drug dealers, where are the role models? And when every opportunity to boost yourself out of poverty is blocked, and politicians are promising you $10 an hour, $10 an hour, we're for wage equality. $10 an hour, folks, is $20,000 a year, equal to whom? And the fast food workers want $15 an hour. Well, guess what? That's $30,000 a year. Who does that make you equal to? Try living on that in New York City. The lunacy that is going on is the carnage. The carnage. And now we come to what happened yesterday. You know, I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I gave testimony to the 9/11 Commission. I've arrested terrorists. And if you look at the pattern that we're seeing, and, you know, the investigation is way, way, way too early about the shooter in Tennessee. So I don't want anyone jumping to conclusions, but certainly it would appear that this was a terrorist attack. I think it's hard to believe anything but that. Whether he had a direct connection to ISIS, whether he did, whether he didn't, I have no idea. But the initial reports is that he was born in Kuwait, the shooter. He had Jordanian citizenship, which means he probably had a Jordanian passport. He was a naturalized United States citizen, and I don't know when he naturalized. But I'm going to take a shot at this and guess that he was a dual national. And we've seen a pattern where naturalized citizens who have U.S. passports are more easily able to travel around the world. If you show up with a passport from the Middle East, people look twice and three times at you. When you show up with a U.S. passport or a passport from Europe, it tends to go a lot easier. And in fact, if you look at Europeans coming into the United States, once you have a passport from that visa waiver country, you don't need a visa. Right there and then, an important layer of security has been peeled away. So you look at all of these factors, and then you have to understand that when we give people citizenship, we're giving them the key to the front door. So even if you built a wall at the Mexican border that was taller than the New World Trade Center complex and electrified the top of it and reinforced the bottom so you couldn't possibly build a tunnel, it wouldn't matter, because if you give green cards and citizenship to aliens so they can easily cross our border legally, then they're going to go back and forth and do what they have to do. And dual nationals now have a passport that they can keep switching back and forth, and it makes it easier for them to cover their tracks as they move around the world. And this is not conjecture on my part. This is part of my experience as an immigration agent. But look at the track record that we've amassed. And I put together a few names here just to give you a little random sampling of where this sort of thing has been involved in the past. So let me, bear with me one moment. I want to pull something up that I think you will find fascinating. I hope you will. Okay. April 16th, 2015, a federal grand jury in the Southern District of Ohio handed up a criminal indictment charging a naturalized United States citizen, Abdurrahman Sheikh Mohammed, a.k.a. Ainley, a native of Somalia, with three federal crimes, two counts of providing material support to a terrorist organization, and one count of making a false statement to an FBI agent about terrorism. What they did not do, however, which I don't understand, was charge this guy with lying on his application for U.S. citizenship. And in fact, if you read the indictment, he had been in communication with his brother, who was in Syria fighting with a terrorist organization, on the side of a terrorist organization. And the brother asked him, have you taken care of your papers? And he responded saying, yes, I have. And I'm giving you an approximation of the phone, of the electronic communication. And the brother said, do you have your U.S. passport yet? And he said, no, I've applied for it. And the brother says, okay, let me know when you have it. I need you to come to me. And he said, well, do you want me to go through Kenya? Do you want me to go directly to Syria? And the brother says, no, come directly to me in Syria. Now, this is what's so remarkable. Clearly, the guy lied on his application for citizenship, because if he had answered the questions truthfully about whether he belonged to foreign organizations and whether any of those organizations were engaged in terrorism, they wouldn't have naturalized him. So the fact that he got naturalized means he had to have lied, or somebody is super incompetent, okay? Well, if he lied on the application, you can prosecute him for it. And once convicted of the charge, they could strip him of his citizenship. And this guy really needs to lose his citizenship if he's guilty. And I'll tell you why. Because allegedly, when he came back to the United States, he came back here with the intentions of doing what this nitwit did in Tennessee yesterday, kill soldiers and law enforcement by committing burglaries to steal guns from houses. He's only 23 years old. Even if he goes to jail for 20 years on those crimes that I've just mentioned, when he gets out of jail, he will still be young enough to pick up a gun and do some serious damage. Why would you not want to strip him of his citizenship? He wasn't charged with it, at least not thus far. And he only got his citizenship a couple of months ago. So this is fresh. You know, no action taken on immigration. But understand that this guy who's now in custody being prosecuted, multiple counts of terrorism, is a newly minted naturalized United States citizen. Let's move right along. February 24th, 2015, and I wrote an article for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I called it The Immigration Factor, Naturalized U.S. Citizen, Added to FBI's Most Wanted Terrorists List. Now, here is a story about this guy, Liban Haji Muhammad. And this is from the FBI press release. A naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists. It almost sounds like, you know, we're supposed to congratulate him. He's been put on the list. Boy, I don't know who writes their stuff on those press releases, but it's really bizarre. But let me go back to it. I just couldn't help but make note of that. Liban Haji Muhammad, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia, has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists, and a reward of up to $50,000 is being offered for information leading to his arrest and conviction. Muhammad is charged with providing material support and resources to Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, a Somali-based terrorist organization. Now, this is where you won't sleep tonight when you hear the rest of this story. It's amazing. Traveling with his U.S. passport, there we go, folks. Muhammad is thought to have left the United States on or about July 5th, 2012. Before his departure, the 29-year-old lived in Northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., where he worked as a cab driver. And here comes the punchline. It is important for us to locate Muhammad because he has knowledge of the Washington, D.C. area's infrastructure, such as shopping areas, metro, airports, and government buildings. This makes him an asset to terrorist associates who might plot attacks on U.S. soil. Once again, naturalized citizen, terrorist, embedding himself, how? By driving a cab. And I've often said that most terrorists want to have jobs that involve taxi cabs, vans, ice cream trucks. It gives them familiarity with the area, it gives them camouflage, and it gives them mobility and the ability to hold clandestine meetings. You know, I followed many people as an agent, because you want to know who's this guy dealing with. You have a wiretap. You follow the guy. He says to some guy, I'll meet you on the corner, walk and don't walk at 3 o'clock, and you put a surveillance team up, and there he is, and you see who he meets with. When a guy is driving a taxi cab and someone gets in the back of the cab, there's no way of knowing if the guy in the back of the cab is just going to his dentist's appointment or if there's a meeting going on between the two of them. So here you go, yet another terrorist, naturalized United States citizen. Let's keep moving. Here's a report May 15, 2015, CNN posted a report, terror arrest in Texas shows new stance after Garland, begins with this statement. This is just last, well, 2 months ago, okay? Washington, CNN, the FBI on Thursday arrested an Iraqi-born American citizen, means he's naturalized, in Texas, alleging that he traveled to Syria to fight with ISIS terrorists and returned to the United States. The case against Bilal Aboud is one indication of federal counterterrorism's official new stance on terrorism. Cases in light the recent foiled terrorist attack in Garland, Texas, against Muhammad Khartoum and contest event. But now here's the real disconcerting part of this story. Prosecutors charge that Aboud was lying to the FBI, but the case represents much more. Aboud is one of hundreds of people the FBI is monitoring in some way, many of whom investigators suspect could be motivated to carry out attacks, but though the evidence remains difficult to assemble. Now catch what this guy did for a living for a while. Aboud, who formerly worked as an interpreter for the U.S. Army in Iraq, immigrated to the U.S. in 2009. So now think about this. Interpreters and translators are the eyes, ears, and mouth of agents of our military, of law enforcement. I've worked with many interpreters in my career. You're in a room with the subject of an investigation. The interpreter asks and answers the questions. You know, you say to the guy, ask him where he lives. Ask him who he's living with. He asks the question. The guy answers. He gives you the answer. He knows who the targets of your investigation are. Think about that. If he doesn't like the answer and he's a bad guy, this translator or interpreter, and the guy gives you an answer that would tip you off that something is going on and this guy is a translator, he could turn around and give you a different answer. You know, you could ask somebody, do you know of any attacks? And the guy could say, yeah, they're planning an attack on Thursday. And the interpreter says, no, he said he's not aware of anything. And unless you have some understanding of that language, you're not going to know that that's what happened. So that shuts down that whole avenue and gives you and shuts down the potential for having vital information. Because although the guy said to you, yeah, there's going to be an attack, the interpreter says, no, he said he doesn't know of anything. Information that might have been useful to save some lives is never cultivated. And meanwhile, the fact that this guy was cooperating puts him at risk and puts his family at risk, because if the interpreter is a bad guy, now he says, wow, this guy is ratting on us, we need to take him out. Understand how dangerous this all is. Of course, this begs another question. Why aren't we doing more to provide the foreign language training to our agents and provide them perhaps with a cash incentive? You know, they were supposed to do that, give bonuses to people who would acquire second and third languages. I'd love to know how far along we are in that program. So we're depending on interpreters, and this isn't the only one. There's another one, too. Let's get to the other one. Let's go to the videotape. I wrote in an article for Front Page Magazine, April 6, 2015, I called my article Connecting the Dots, Iran, Immigration, and National Security. And so I said here, I discussed, among other issues, the case of Wissam Alush, a former translator for the U.S. military in the Middle East. Both the Blaze and my San Antonio newspapers published articles about him. The title of the Blaze article was God of Death Bombshell Revelation About Alleged Hezbollah Commander Arrested in Texas. So here's a translator who's not only involved one way or another, and Hezbollah is sponsored by Iran, by the way. He was the commander. He was one of their bosses, if you will. And this guy was working for a private contractor overseas as a translator. How many American lives or allied lives or good guy lives were lost because of this guy? We'll never know. Well, maybe none. You know, these are allegations, and, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But it's very disconcerting to hear or read a report that says we have these interpreters, we have translators working for the government who wind up being accused of being involved in terrorism. Why doesn't anybody talk about that? Why is it when you go to the mainstream media, as I frequently do, and say, you know, we really need to talk about the immigration component to national security, you would think I want to talk about pedophiles or something. I'm not making this stuff up. I'm reading to you from FBI news releases. I'm reading to you from CNN reports. But the emphasis wasn't on the immigration the way it needed to be. But if you look at the pattern, if you look at how we wind up with foreign nationals getting U.S. citizenship, getting security clearances, and then getting trusted positions, understand how dangerous this is. Does that mean we shouldn't be naturalizing people? Absolutely not. We should. Absolutely. But I'd love to know how thoroughly they screen the applications. When I was a new agent, we didn't have that many applications, and agents would actually go out and knock on doors and do what were known as good moral character investigations. They'd show people the photograph, and they'd say, "Do you know Charlie?" And they'd say, "Sure, we know Charlie. Great, what kind of guy is he?" And if the neighbor said, "Well, he's a nice guy, but I got to tell you, on Fridays when he gets paid every other Friday, he stops at the bar, gets drunk as a skunk, comes home, beats the snot out of his wife. Just last year, he really upset their little boy because he took the family cat and threw it out the window, and the poor cat died." Got to tell you something. It didn't matter if this guy didn't have arrest records. If we were able to verify that this happened, even if he wasn't convicted of anything, we were not going to naturalize him, because anybody that can do that, go home and beat his wife and beat his kids and throw the cat out the window, obviously does not have good moral character. Today, we can't give out citizenship fast enough. We have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and all those others on the Hill saying, "Oh, let's give them citizenship. What could possibly go wrong?" Folks, we are living in a parallel universe. We're endangering the lives of our fellow Americans. And there's no excuse for it. And if you dare try to speak out about all this, the insults start flying like you would not believe it. It's snow in a blizzard. Why? Why can't we deal with the reality that our government's first obligation to us is to look out for our safety, look out for our well-being, look out for national security? What a novel thought. But that's not what's happening. It's case after case after case. So we have the story of Wissam Alush. We have the story of Bilal Aboud. We have the story of Liban Haji Mohammed. We have the story of this guy, Abdirrahman Sheikh Mohammed. We have the story of the Times Square bomber, Faisal Shahzad. Now, there's another good story. Faisal Shahzad comes here from Pakistan on a student visa at age 20. And just months after becoming a United States citizen through naturalization, he sets off a car bomb in Times Square that's in his SUV. And thank God the darn thing fizzles. Nobody hurt. But he's charged with terrorism. And in court, he said, "I hate your system of government. I hate America. I hate democracy. I'm all for Islam." And the judge said, "But you just took an oath to become a citizen." And the guy basically says, "Yeah, I took a false oath. I lied." So, who investigated him? Who investigated him? And then why did Ray Kelly, New York City Police Commissioner, former Commissioner of U.S. Customs, Ray Kelly, New York City Police Department, arguably the most sophisticated police department, certainly in the United States, if not the world. We have detectives overseas augmenting what we're getting from the FBI and the CIA because Mayor Bloomberg felt that we weren't getting the information that we needed from the FBI when we needed it here in New York. So he said, "I'm going to send detectives overseas. I've got a responsibility." So, you know, Police Commissioner Kelly, the leader of the sophisticated department, 35,000 cops. It's not a police department. It's almost like a small army. And he describes Faisal Shahzad in a newspaper headline as a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Can somebody out there please tell me, because I don't have the wisdom to understand the reasoning. I lack the intelligence to understand this. How in the world does Kelly determine that a person who at age 20 first comes to the United States on a student visa is a classic example of a homegrown terrorist? The lies just keep on coming. The propaganda just keeps on coming. It's not political correctness, folks, and you're making a dreadful mistake if you truly believe that what we're dealing with is political correctness. No, this is propaganda and it's lies and it's distortions and it's misinformation. Somebody who comes here at age 20 is an adult, not homegrown, not grown in this home in any event, but yet another one. And then we have the Tsarnaev family, and they come to the United States on visas. When they are out of status, they're overstaying, they claim political asylum, and wham, they get political asylum. And then one of the two brothers gets citizenship, the other one doesn't because there's some question about what he's up to, and then they carry out that bombing in Boston. This is beyond belief, because they went back to Russia after we granted them political asylum. Political asylum means I have a credible fear that if I return home, something terrible is going to happen to me because of my race, because of my religion, because of my ethnicity, whatever. If I go back there, I face persecution or worse. Okay. So we agree with them. They said, you're right, we're going to protect you. Live in America, be part of the American dream. Welcome to the country. And as soon as they get lawful status, wham, they hop on an airplane, boom, they're in the skies, and they're flying back to the country they told us they could never return to. Do you think somebody should have looked at that and said, wait a minute, why are they going back to Russia if they just told us that if they went back to Russia, they would face persecution or worse? Does anybody think maybe they lied? I did my very first hearing before a congressional committee on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years, almost exactly before 9/11. The hearing was predicated on two terrorist attacks that were carried out in the United States in 1993. Because everybody understood that there was a problem with how the terrorists entered the United States, got political asylum, got amnesty, and so forth. So the hearing's topic was visa fraud and immigration benefit application fraud. People lying on the visa application, people lying on applications for lawful status in the United States. And the Clinton administration, in response to this hearing, implemented a program known as Citizenship USA, where they ran over 1 million applications for citizenship through the system faster than crap goes through a goose. And a good friend of mine testified at a congressional hearing and referred to that process, Citizenship USA, or CUSA, as you would pronounce the acronym. He called it the Jiffy Lube process, and within weeks was removed as the chief of investigations for a major U.S. city for the INS. But what difference does it make? You see, it's not one isolated incident. It's not a second incident. And I could dig up many, many more. I mean, I sit there and I go through this stuff on a regular basis. I could sit here for the next 3 weeks and rattle off more and more cases that parallel what I just read to you. These are not isolated cases. These are what passes for business as usual. The GAO does investigations, and the Inspector General, Internal Affairs, does investigations. And they keep coming up with the same problem. There's no integrity to the system. The administration doesn't really keep track of statistics. The administration doesn't know which criminal aliens they've released. There's no integrity to the political asylum program. And then there was a story about a year ago, and in fact I was on with Tucker Carlson over at Fox and Friends on a weekend to talk about how the administration said, you know what, up until now, if you've had any kind of contact with terrorists, it knocks you out of the box for asylum. We're going to make it easy. Even if you've had incidental contact, you know what? We'll let you come in. Well, before that happened, the fraud rate was 70%, according to GAO. 7 out of 10 applications for asylum involved lies. The 9/11 Commission warned that fraud in that program was one of the key embedding tactics of terrorists. So we err on the side of what? Making it easier for terrorists to enter our country and get lawful status? Does that make any sense to anybody? And, you know, the answer has to be a resounding no. Let me pull something up for you. I know I've read this in the past, but I really believe that it is so important to to review this material, because most people don't understand just how dangerous all this business is. The problem that we're facing, folks, and this is a very serious problem, is that we have no idea who we're truly dealing with. And we're giving people lawful status. We're giving people the ability to do serious harm to us. Oh, and by the way, here's something else before we get to that. When Bin Laden's compound was raided by the Navy SEALs, incredibly, among the things found in the hideout was a copy of the 9/11 Commission report. So obviously Bin Laden has been involved reading it. God forbid our own Congress should. I really wonder how many members of Congress who stood there thumping the podium and screaming and jumping up and down and demanding to know why nobody connected the dots. I'd love to know how many people themselves had actually read the report. Because that was the whole point to the report, folks, to be able to connect the dots. This is actually a little bit of what is contained in a massive report that I wrote for The Social Contract, 23 pages long. I can't wait for it to be published. This is how the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel begins. This is a preface. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. It goes on and says, Congress gave the commission the mandate to study, evaluate, and report on immigration, non-immigrant visas, and border security as those areas relate to the events of 9/11. The staff report represents 14 months of such research. It is based on thousands of pages of documents we reviewed from the State Department, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of Defense, and approximately 25 briefings on various border security topics and more than 200 interviews. We are grateful to all who assisted and supported us along the way. The story begins with a factual overview of the September 11 border story. This introduction summarizes many of the key facts of the hijackers' entry into the United States. In it, we endeavor to dispel the myth that their entry into the United States was, quote, clean and legal, unquote. It was not. Three hijackers carried passports with indicators of Islamic extremism linked to Al-Qaeda. Two others carried passports manipulated in a fraudulent manner. It is likely that several more hijackers carried passports with similar fraudulent manipulation. Two hijackers lied on their visa applications. Once in the United States, two hijackers violated the terms of their visas. One overstayed his visa, and all but one obtained some form of state identification. We know that six of the hijackers used the state-issued identifications to check in for their flights on September 11. Three of them were fraudulently obtained. From square one, immigration laws were being violated. But if you want to give a conniption to the politicians, ask them why they don't use the 9/11 Commission report as the starting point for any discussion on immigration. Ask them why they don't talk about immigration as a component of national security. Why don't they raise the nexus between sanctuary cities and the ability not only of criminals but terrorists to hide in plain sight in major cities across the United States? What is so radical about that question? You know, you look at what I've just conveyed to you about the naturalized citizens recently. You look at what happened after 9/11 with the commission. This is astonishing. Now, here's another one to think about. And let me see where we are here. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud, lying on those applications. And think of all these politicians, Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, all of them. If you talk about a massive legalization program, you're talking about the potential for immigration fraud. Not a single one of them has said anything about hiring agents and enforcing the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. Not one of them has said, you know, there's no way, even if you think it's a great idea, and I think it's a horrific idea, but even if you think it's a great idea to give millions of people lawful status who violated our borders, there is no way to do it, whereas the fraud rate won't go totally off the charts. If we have a problem with fraud now, what happens when we dump tens of millions of additional applications into the hopper? How many more dead Americans do we need in the United States? How many more? What's the quota? What is the damn quota? How many more murders do we have to have? How many more airplanes into buildings or shootings or whatever does America need to have that we're so desperate to bring more people into the country who want to kill us? People who are entering the United States need to be screened carefully. We live in a dangerous world and a dangerous era. Who in their right mind would simply say we're going to rubber stamp millions of applications and give people ID and let them go on their merry way, never mind they ran our borders. Never mind they violated the terms of their admission. We're just going to take all their applications and run it through the machinery. There's no way the system will have integrity. And what you may not know, and I spent a year as an adjudications officer, which is one of the advantages I have because I've done all these jobs personally. I spent a year doing it. Approving an application takes just minutes. You look at the paperwork, you check off the boxes, you take the admission, the approval stamp, and you smack the paper in a couple places with the approval stamp, you put your initials on it, you staple it all together, you throw it in an envelope, and it gets mailed out. End of story. 20 to 30 minutes maximum. If you want to deny an application, because now we have to presume there's going to be a legal challenge, you have to order an investigation most times from outside. You have to get an agent who can do it. We don't have the agents. There's no outside investigation. So that's gone. Lots of luck. Now you got to write a report. And the report has to be meticulous again. Why? Because somebody is probably going to challenge you. So it's got to stand up to the scrutiny, or for all your work, they're going to get the benefit they're looking for anyway, even though they lie. So now you write a very careful report, and you have to go up to one of the government lawyers and have them review it for legal sufficiency to make certain that you dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, and that's time-consuming. So now they hold on to it, and their workload is piled up to the roof also. And let's say you get the paperwork back, and then you go back downstairs, and you have to make some corrections. This could take days. It could take weeks. And most adjudications offices are going to be told you have to move 12 applications a day, or 13, or 14, or whatever the god-awful number is going to be. Well, guess where the pressure is? And if your evaluation says that productivity is key, and my conservative friends always talk about, we need more productivity, keep those wheels spinning, spin the wheels. Well, the only way you can spin the wheels, boys and girls, is to approve all the applications that land on your desk, which is pretty much what we're doing now. So those of you who complain that the government moves too slowly, you'll be happy to know we're cranking them out like hotcakes, and the fraud rate is 70%. Remember that old quote, the terrorists only got to get it right once? Every time a fraudulent application is approved, there is an opportunity for a terrorist to get it right. But we're going to spin the wheels of that machinery, and we're going to crank them out. And if we're dealing with 30 million applications, they're going to hire people from the outside. God knows how well they'll be able to screen them, right? And they're going to spin those wheels. And then when the wheels come off the wagon, where are we? Please understand the danger to what we are talking about. Translators who are involved with terrorism being given access to bases and documents and agents and informants. Do you understand, I hope, the potential for a disaster? That's what's so mind-boggling. The obvious solution, foreign language training. Are they doing it? Not nearly enough, or they wouldn't be using the translators. There's the obvious evidence. We are our own worst enemy because politicians who don't care about American lives, and that was why I just wrote an article for CAPS, and I'd love for you to go to capsweb.org and read it, C-A-P-S, CAPS Web. I called it Sanctuary Cities and Collateral Damage. In the military, collateral damage is the euphemism for civilian casualties. You know, you drop a bomb and oops, some of the debris flies into another building and kills and wounds a bunch of people. That's collateral damage. So the U.S. military, very sophisticated, procures all these very expensive weapons so that they can launch a missile into a specific window on a specific floor of a specific building. No more carpet bombing like we used to see during the Second World War. Take it out. Pinpoint accuracy. Wham. That's good. And why do we do it? Minimize civilian casualties. Minimize collateral damage. But here inside the United States, collateral damage goes on every single day. Whether it's the drunk driver who runs someone over, the wackaloon who rapes somebody who shouldn't be here and he's done it before, whether it's 9/11, whether it's what happened yesterday. And again, we don't know yet the particulars, and I don't want to jump the gun, but the fact that this guy's a naturalized citizen caused my antenna to go up. How thoroughly was he investigated? I'm not saying we shouldn't naturalize people, but given the risks, don't you think these applications should be scrutinized? And they're not. And if you can't scrutinize it, then slow down the damn machinery because people are dying. You see, that's the issue. This is not victimless. Not victimless. And Bernie Sanders makes that appeal and says, oh, my God, the Holocaust, which really infuriated me. My grandmother died in the Holocaust, along with many of my mom's relatives. I was named for my mother's mother. Her name was Malka, which means queen. My Hebrew name is Melech, which means king. I was named for a woman who died in the Holocaust, my grandmother, my mother's mother. So to listen to Bernie Sanders invoke the Holocaust and talk about providing illegal aliens with identity documents when among those people who want to come here are people involved with the drug trade and terrorism is insanity. And no, it's probably a small percentage. But even if you're talking about 2%, and I think it's probably worse than that, but what's 2% of millions? And look at what just 19 terrorists did to us on 9/11. So all I'm saying is, slow it down. Let's have some scrutiny. Let's do something to restore a semblance of law, order, and integrity to the process. But, of course, Bernie Sanders got so emotional, and the crowd was roaring, well, the Holocaust, we've got to give them citizenship, and the place went nuts. You know, we are so easy to stampede. Really, we are. I was thinking about Ted Cruz when he was in South Carolina saying, we're going to bring in the best and brightest so American can lead. And everybody's cheering. Knuckleheads, he's talking about bringing in replacements for your jobs. This is like Colonel Sanders standing in the barnyard promising a bunch of chickens that he's got a new recipe for fried chicken. Is that good news? Really? Is that worth cheering about? But Bernie Sanders, that audience into a frenzy. And how does he do it? By talking about the Holocaust and equating illegal immigration with that. And meanwhile, we're bringing in tens of thousands of refugees, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with political asylum. When I was back in college, I was a B'nai B'rith president. I went to the White House, and to show you what kind of an old bum I am, LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, was the president, and he was in agreement. And Ralph Abernathy spoke at the event. He read a telegram or a statement from Martin Luther King, who back in 1964 was still alive, and everybody was supportive of the position. And it wasn't only about Jewish people. It was about religious minorities. Let them come to America. Let them go to whatever country would have them, but let them leave the oppression of Russia. And as an inspector, I loved admitting refugees because now the circle had gone fully around. I wanted so much to believe that part of the reason these refugees were coming to the United States were because of those demonstrations I'd participated in. but we have to understand the risk that if we don't properly scrutinize people who come from countries that sponsor terrorism, that we could wind up with terrorists in the United States. But no one's thinking about that. Nobody wants to talk about that. That's the conversation they don't want to have. But I will tell you that I'm on Newsmax this evening on the J.D. Hayworth's program, and we taped it earlier, and it's actually on right now. But understand that Newsmax did do the piece. I want to be fair to them. A couple days ago, I was on with One American News Network on the Daily Ledger, again talking about some of these same issues. So there are the smaller networks that are really hammering the issue much in a much more forthright manner. And they should be proud of what they're doing. It's true journalism. Because we need to have the information in our hands. And we need to take the information and we need to confront our politicians with it. And I really get the sense, and I'm not standing up for Donald Trump. I'm not supporting anybody's presidency. It's way too early. There's too many issues. But I just find it fun watching these politicians, the career politicians, squirming. I mean, to see Donald Trump stand there and say, I don't want contributions from anybody. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm rich. And he repeated it about three or four times. And it gave me a giggle, and he said, I don't want to talk to any lobbyists. I don't want anybody's money. No one's going to tell me what I'm supposed to do. I want to do what's right. That's got to strike fear in the heart of the career politicians who are bought and sold on the commodities exchange. You know, I don't know why we don't have a new position in the U.S. government called the official auctioneer. Maybe they can get the guy from the Mecum Auto Auction. You know, what am I bid for more citizens? What am I bid for more H-1B visas? What am I bid for the destruction of the middle class? I find it remarkable. I find it remarkable that there are politicians who would vote against the best interests of Americans after they took an oath of office, after they made all those promises to their neighbors in many cases. I want to know what kind of sociopath it takes, what kind of sociopath you have to be willing to sell out your country at a time of war. Because we are at war, folks. What happened yesterday was certainly not workplace violence. Certainly not workplace violence. It was very upsetting to see the photographs. They're finally releasing the names of the servicemen who were killed. One guy has a 2-year-old baby. When that child grows up, how do you explain to that child that your father died because our country's too stupid to know how to defend itself right here within our own borders? How do you have that conversation with that child or with that child's mother, who's now widowed, probably quite young? How do you have that conversation? 9/11 was very tough. I'd lost my parents to cancer, my first wife to cancer, and cancer is my enemy. But I at least said, well, we got the best doctors, did everything we could. But to see 3,000 healthy people die because of our government's corruption, ineptitude, and incompetence. See, I really believe 9/11 was preventable. We knew that immigration was a key issue. And I truly believe it. I will go to my grave believing it, that if the Clinton administration had addressed the vulnerabilities that we all knew existed, that's why we had that hearing, 9/11 would not have happened. And we've had more terrorist attacks. And everyone is worried about the rights of people who came to the country illegally. Illegally. Now, this guy wasn't an illegal alien, but it's the mechanism by which we give status, lawful status to the aliens that's flawed. And that you have politicians talking about giving millions of people who violated our borders lawful status with a flawed screening mechanism is beyond belief. I mean, just stop and think about it. And maybe nothing could have been done to prevent what happened yesterday in Tennessee. Maybe this kid got citizenship when he was 5 years old, you know, and there was no way. Maybe. But we need those answers. And he's certainly not alone. And that's the point. And when you read about this guy, Alush, when you read about the other translators, some of whom were in the midst of getting their citizenship, when you read about that guy in Ohio who just got his citizenship, and even then, because of the narrative, the administration indicts this guy on everything but immigration fraud, because goodness gracious, you can't raise that issue. And you know, I can tell you from personal experience, having been before many grand juries, if you go to a grand jury and you charge this guy with supporting a terrorist organization, and they did, two counts, and you charge him with lying about where he had been, that was the third count, you now have the grounds for charging him with lying on his application for naturalization, for citizenship. And all that it would have taken is for those people who went before the grand jury to have retrieved the application for citizenship. And that should be a slam dunk, because I'm quite certain that it is now available in electronic form. I'm willing to bet they could have pulled that thing up within an hour. And all they would have needed to do is to take that document with them to the grand jury and then say, well, we're charging him with two counts of aiding and abetting a terrorist organization, one count of lying about his travels, and one count of lying on his application to citizenship, where he said he had no involvement with a foreign organization. If you have enough to charge him with aiding and abetting a terrorist organization, you obviously have enough to prove that he lied when he said he had no involvement. It would have taken another couple of minutes. It didn't happen. And I don't believe it was an accident. And I don't believe that there's any justification for it. And yes, maybe they will eventually issue a superseding indictment, but why wasn't it done at the outset? Immigration, according to the 9/11 Commission, is either a very powerful tool in our arsenal, a very powerful weapon in our arsenal against terrorists and criminals, or it will be a weapon used against us. I was speaking to some friends the other day, or a day ago, about El Chapo and his jailbreak. And I half tongue-in-cheek said, you know, the smartest place he could go to hide is probably Los Angeles or San Francisco. They're sanctuary cities. No one's going to ask him anything. No one's going to ask him anything. We protect you here. And it's so remarkable, because when you think of the word sanctuary, you think of a place of peace, of security, of serenity. Peace and serenity. Just like the Steinle family is experiencing now. It's got to stop, ladies and gentlemen. And the politicians are so out of control that when a guy like Donald Trump steps up to the microphone, and love him, hate him, I don't care, it's just a point, and he speaks candidly about his concerns about immigration, and the Huffington Post decides that they're going to take him off the political page and put him in the entertainment section. What does that say? Because he spoke out? Yeah, he wasn't very elegant in the way he went after the issue of the Mexicans. But I got to tell you, on the issue of the Mexican government did provide pamphlets to their people telling them how to enter the United States and evade the Border Patrol. You know, they didn't say attack the patrol, but they did say, if you are stopped, don't answer any questions. Don't make it easy for them. Make it difficult for them. Our friends. And from what I understand, the United States offered to send help to look for El Chapo, and the Mexicans said, no, we don't want any help. It was clearly an inside job, but we don't want any help. This guy has been credited, if you want to use that term, that doesn't seem to be the right word, with tens of thousands of brutal deaths in Mexico. And I can tell you there's deaths happening in the United States because of the drug trade, either directly or indirectly. I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force. I was surprised, but not really, when I read the statistics that last year New York State, the border state of New York, was where the greatest amount of heroin was seized. You know, this permeates our country. So when our people say to the Mexicans, we'd like to help you look for El Chapo, no thanks, never mind. The last time he escaped, I believe he was on the run for about 10 years. I wonder how many years he's going to be on the run now. The man who never returned. But don't bother helping us look for him. We're in the twilight zone. We are absolutely in the twilight zone. And so many Americans on a day-to-day basis are paying for the madness with their lives. And really and truly, this is why we the people need to step up to the plate. We need to push the issue. We need to confront the politicians. That's why I want you to go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Progressives for Immigration Reform, Front Page Magazine. Even the Daily Caller has one of my articles up this past week, Tucker Carlson's website. And, of course, The Social Contract in a couple of weeks, you're going to, I think, find it very helpful to see what I'm giving you. And what I want you to do is go to your elected representative and demand answers. And the nice thing about The Social Contract, this big monster article, 23 pages long, it's available for my favorite price, free, on the Internet. And you can absolutely take that link and shoot it to every elected member of Congress and every state legislature and every governor and city hall and say to those people, what are you doing? What are you doing? With all these concerns where everyone's talking about no longer designating certain areas, you know, gun-free zones, how about if we deal with the immigration issue to keep people out that want to kill us? And yes, I know there are some people who will say, well, they're still the homegrown, and yes, there are. But any way that we could whittle down the numbers is certainly worthwhile, don't you think? Al Capone went to jail not for racketeering, murder, extortion, prostitution, and bootlegging, but for tax evasion. You know, whatever you got to do, get these bums off the street. Get them out of our country. Prevent them from entering our country. That's all I'm suggesting. And meanwhile, you would help Americans find jobs, and you'd lower the remittances being wired out of the United States. This is more than a twofer. There is no good news in any of this if we allow the status quo to continue. We're witnessing an awful lot of damage being done to the United States. And because some guy gets up there who's not beholden to the usual machinery, I enjoy watching these bums squirm from both sides of the aisle. Squirm, baby, squirm. And that's why I think Donald Trump is doing so well in the ratings. I mean, this could become my favorite spectator sport. When I was a young man, I said it was girl watching. Now it's watching politicians squirm. It's fun. It's really enjoyable watching their motors spinning because they don't know what to do. How do we deal with this guy? We can't intimidate him. We can't threaten him. We can't threaten to cut off his funding. You know, in Washington, that's a big deal. The guy runs for the Senate or the House, and he doesn't play ball, and he doesn't get appointed to the appropriate committees that he wants to be on. And then they say, hey, you know what? You're not going to get funding for your campaign. That's the real juicy one. We got to cut off the funding to your campaign. And there's Donald Trump saying, I don't want a penny from anybody. I have so much money, I don't need anybody's money. Do you know how scary that is? Because they don't have any lever they can use against him. I find it enjoyable. Because all these other people that are depending on these campaign contributions are really being bribed. Going to be real blunt about it. So many of these campaign contributions are legalized bribes. Why else would people shell out that kind of money? You know, if you get pulled over by a police officer for speeding and you offer the cop a 50, there's a good chance you're going to wind up in cuffs. But if you offer the mayor enough money, they'll raise the speed limit. Give me a break. Give me a break. We're living in a perilous era. The message was driven home not once but twice in California, Tennessee. Criminals, terrorists, folks, dead is dead. Dead is dead. And while it's way too early to know the particulars about Tennessee, and as I said, maybe this guy came here many, many years ago and there'd be no way of knowing. If he just got naturalized, though, then I want to know how carefully his application was scrutinized. And I really believe that's a reasonable question, especially with information, and again, not confirmed, but seems to be out there that his father was being looked at because of possible terror ties. Was this before or after they were naturalized, or before or after the shooter was naturalized? Because if it turns out that this happened and then he was naturalized, I want to know what the investigation looks like when they finally said, yep, this guy, you know, meets all the requirements. This has been happening too frequently, where people get green cards and citizenship, and it turns out that they have a nexus with terror. If this is yet another one of those cases, then, you know, we know what we're dealing with. A level of incompetence and ineptitude that is clearly unacceptable. So, you know, we have to wait and see with that case. But the other cases I quoted to you, there was no doubt about them. You know, there's a problem. I mean, yes, you know, I think a couple of them are still waiting to stand trial. But my point is, the scrutiny was not right. The vetting process leaves a lot to be desired. And a massive amnesty program would just throw everything completely off the rails. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop. You know, there's a credit card company that says, you know, membership has its rewards. Don't you think it's time that citizenship should have its rewards? So when you go to one of these events and you hear some politicians stand up and talk about how we're going to bring in the best and brightest so America can lead, my advice, folks, please give it some thought. Stand up and say to that politician in a loud voice, citizens first. Citizens first. I'd much rather build universities and schools than jails. We need to provide opportunities for American kids because far too many American kids are living below the poverty line. It breeds violence. It breeds crime. It certainly doesn't help America. It doesn't help America lead, and it doesn't help the way of life for too many of our fellow citizens. We need to fix this, and we need to fix it soon. We should have fixed it yesterday, in fact. In any event, it was really wonderful spending this past 90 minutes. I know it's the Michael Cutler Hour, and I've been teased about that, but I usually find that there's so much to cover that 60 minutes just doesn't quite do it, so I've decided to tack on that extra 30. Next week, I expect a good friend of mine, Don Rosenberg, to be joining me. Don's son was killed by an alien who had no driver's license, who had no right to be driving that car. Terrible tragedy. Terrible tragedy. And I'm tired of the tragedies. I want to see the government of the United States of America live up to that lofty description provided by Abraham Lincoln when he speaks of government of the people, by the people, for the people. Sure as hell we're not getting it today, are we? Again, it was a great joining you this evening, folks. I look forward to, once again, spending some time with you next week. And please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week, everybody. Have a great weekend. So long for now.